Chapter 1. If it had not rained on a certain May morning, Valency Stirling's whole life would have been entirely different. She would have gone with the rest of her clan to Aunt Wellington's engagement picnic, and Dr. Trent would have gone to Montreal. But it did rain, and you shall hear what happened to her because of it. Valency wakened early in the lifeless, hopeless hour just preceding dawn. She had not slept very well. One does not sleep well sometimes when one is 29 on the morrow and unmarried in a community and connection where the unmarried are simply those who have failed to get a man. Deerwood and the Stirlings had long since relegated Valency to hopeless old maidenhood, but Valency herself had never quite relinquished a certain pitiful, shamed, little hope that Romans would come her way yet. Never until this wet, horrible morning when she wakened to the fact that she was 29 and unsought by any man. Aye, there lay this thing. Valency did not mind so much being an old maid. After all, she thought, being an old maid couldn't possibly be as dreadful as being married to an Uncle Wellington, or an Uncle Benjamin, or even an Uncle Herbert. What hurt her was that she had never had a chance to be anything but an old maid. No man had ever desired her. The tears came into her eyes as she lay there alone in the faintly greying darkness. She dared not let herself cry as hard as she wanted to, for two reasons. She was afraid that crying might bring on another attack of that pain around the heart. She had had a spell of it after she had got into bed. Rather worse than any she had had yet. And she was afraid her mother would notice her red eyes at breakfast and keep at her with minute, persistent, mosquito-like questions regarding the cause thereof. Suppose, thought Valency with a ghastly grin, I answered with the plain truth. I am crying because I cannot get married. How horrified mother would be. Though she is ashamed every day of her life of her old maid daughter. But of course, appearances should be kept up. It is not, Valency could hear her mother's prim, dictatorial voice asserting, it is not maidenly to think about men. The thought of her mother's expression made Valency laugh, for she had a sense of humour nobody in her clan suspected. For that matter, there were a good many things about Valency that nobody suspected. But her laughter was very superficial, and presently she lay there, a huddled, futile little figure, listening to the rain pouring down outside and watching with a sick distaste the chill, merciless light creeping into her ugly, sordid room. She knew the ugliness of that room by heart, knew it and hated it. The yellow-painted floor with one hideous hooked rug by the bed, with a grotesque, hooked dog on it, always grinning at her when she awoke. The faded dark red paper, the ceiling discoloured by old leaks and crossed by cracks. The narrow, pinched little washstand. The brown paper lambrequin with purple roses on it, the spotted old-looking glass with the crack across it, propped up on the inadequate dressing-table, the jar of ancient potpourri made by her mother in her mythical honeymoon, the shell-covered box with one burst corner, which Cousin Stickles had made in her equally mythical girlhood, the beaded pincushion with half its bead fringe gone, the one stiff yellow chair, the faded old motto gone, but not forgotten, worked in coloured yarns about great-grandmother Sterling's grim old face. The old photographs of ancient relatives long banished from the rooms below. There were only two pictures that were not of relatives. One, an old chromo of a puppy sitting on a rainy doorstep. That picture always made Valency unhappy. That forlorn little dog crouched on the doorstep in the driving rain. Why didn't someone open the door and let him in? The other picture was a faded passepartouted engraving of Queen Louise coming down a stairway, which Aunt Wellington had lavishly given her on her 10th birthday. For 19 years she had looked at it and hated it. Beautiful, smug, self-satisfied Queen Louise. But she never dared destroy it or remove it. Mother and Cousin Stickles would have been aghast. Or, as Valency irreverently expressed it in her thoughts, would have had a fit. Every room in the house was ugly, of course. But downstairs appearances were kept up somewhat. There was no money for rooms nobody ever saw. Valency sometimes felt that she could have done something for her room herself, even without money, if she were permitted. But her mother had negatived every timid suggestion, and Valency did not persist. Valency never persisted. She was afraid to. Her mother could not brook opposition. Mrs. Sterling would sulk for days if offended, with the airs of an insulted duchess. The only thing Valency liked about her room was that she could be alone there at night to cry if she wanted to. But, after all, what did it matter if a room which you used for nothing except sleeping and dressing in were ugly? Valency was never permitted to stay alone in her room for any other purpose. People who wanted to be alone, so Mrs. Frederick Sterling and Cousin Stickles believed, could only want to be alone for some sinister purpose. But her room in the Blue Castle was everything a room should be. Valency, so cowed and subdued and overridden and snubbed in real life, was wont to let herself go rather splendidly in her daydreams. Nobody in the Sterling clan or its ramifications suspected this, least of all her mother and Cousin Stickles. They never knew that Valency had two homes, the ugly red brick box of a home on Elm Street and the Blue Castle in Spain. Valency had lived spiritually in the Blue Castle ever since she could remember. She had been a very tiny child when she found herself possessed of it. Always, when she shut her eyes, she could see it plainly with its turrets and banners on the pine-clad mountain height, wrapped in its faint blue loveliness against the sunset skies of a fair and unknown land. Everything wonderful and beautiful was in that castle. Jewels that queens might have worn, robes of moonlight and fire, couches of roses and gold, long flights of shallow marble steps with great white urns and with slender mist-clad maidens going up and down them. Courts, marble-pillared, where shimmering fountains fell and nightingales sang among the myrtles. Halls of mirrors that reflected only handsome knights and lovely women, herself the loveliest of all, for whose glance men died. All that supported her through the boredom of her days was the hope of going on a dream spree at night. Most, if not all, of the Sterlings would have died of horror if they had known half the things Valency did in her Blue Castle.